listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to Nerd Assemble episode 139. I am Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I am Retroid.
This week we'll be talking about fan creations, Supernatural, Sense8, and more.
As ever, you can find notes for this episode over on www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also tweet us right now at nerdspodcast. You could email us if you want at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk. And if you're listening to this episode through the website and you want a different method, we are also available on iTunes and Stitcher. But we were going to talk about, you know, Uwebowl originally for this episode. And then I was like, I don't really want to talk about Uwebowl because he just tells everyone to fuck off all the time. And then we collectively, as like a species, tell him to fuck off. And then he tells us to fuck off. And it's just this. And when you think about it, when you really get down to it, his works actually are worse than a lot of fan creations out there.
Yeah, he actively works to lower the collective artistic worth of our species.
Well, I mean, if you've actually watched the Game Theorists, one of their later ones on why video game films are bad, apparently there's actually a weird kind of thing with, I think, Germany, where they pay tax on how much revenue they make from the films. So
it's
technically better for a film to bomb than for it to be successful, which would explain why Uwebowl makes bad video game films.
You see, I'll just watch the producers instead.
Which the Game Theorists did actually mention on that. Not in a bad way. But yeah. You know, in the kind of scenario where it's like you actually want the film to fail rather than succeed, and by succeeding it will fail, and by failing it will succeed.
Now I've got Springtime for Hitler going on through my head, and I want to watch it again.
Meanwhile,
and I do mean it—the original.
Gene Wilder. Meanwhile, there was a film theorists episode that because Game Theory have launched a film theory channel, and they put a bunch of videos up last week, and one of them includes
have they got channel theory.
and one of the videos that went up was like the formula for basically winning Oscars, and there was a very shocking trend out of all the sort of Oscar winners over since the Academy Awards has existed, and it was like, oh yeah, by the way, films that are about World War II, specifically the Holocaust, seem to do really well at winning Best Picture. And it's like, oh, fuck. Because it's just like, no. Yeah.
But it's also to do with the amount of money that actors get paid after winning, like, Best Actor Oscar and whatnot. And the disparity between male actors and female actors' pay rises is astronomical. It's like female actresses get like 8% compared to, you know,
8% more.
I think their salary increases by 8%.
Okay.
Whereas
best actors
get, you know, something stupid like an extra, you know, kind of couple of million.
Okay. Well, how does this relate to fan creations? It doesn't really, but fan creations has been a hot topic in private discussions amongst people, mostly because of myself, and the fact that AI actually started reading Supernatural fan fiction this year.
You're coming out of the closet,
and
as it were,
and B might have started writing some. I'm not telling you where you can find it, dear listeners.
To be fair, there's a certain amount of success that can be found in writing fan fiction. I mean, that's pretty much how 50 Shades of Grey got, you know, it's got, which is kind of weird because it's like.
But you know what? What's even weirder is looking at the kinds of stories from even within Supernatural that could follow the route of something like 50 Shades of Grey, there are plenty of BDSM fanfics across so many, not just supernatural. I mean, I don't tend to read anything outside of supernatural fanfic, but when you're searching for fic, you see other universes discussed and used, and ones that lend themselves naturally
and characters
to,
as well.
Yeah, that's the ones used. That lend themselves naturally to BDSM. It's like, obviously, there's Sherlock, especially after what happened in with the what's her face.
What?
The dominatrix.
Okay, yeah.
In Sherlock. Yeah. You know, kind of makes sense. There's now lots of BDSM Sherlock fic.
Ah, right.
That, like, if there weren't before, there's now tons of it.
Is there?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's something I've seen from afar and just...
What, BDSM?
Well, fanfic.
Oh, right, okay.
He says landing himself into further shit. Oh, twisty, turny language.
It's just weird, the sort of the fanfic landscape. So if you've got like places like fanfiction.net and
I follow a fanfic bot who, you know, randomly tweets out terrible lines.
Oh, that sounds brilliant.
And
that's the good kind of bot.
Sonic the Hedgehog fanfic. Oh. I mean, just really disturbing.
Because there's these weird kind of stuff that gets sexual, like weird interactions of like various fetishes that just kind of cross over. So you've got corners that kind of go over more towards a sort of furryism and a hint of bestiality, and then other stuff that obviously goes towards slash and having like characters that are straight or maybe bi, but mostly straight in the main actual proper canon text, suddenly with characters of the same sex from the same thing. And it's just strange, and a lot of women write fan fiction.
Well, we've talked previously about the type of things that men will do with kind of their fandoms versus women and their fandoms.
I mean, there's some guys out there writing it as well, but they also tend to feel like they're perhaps from slightly marginalised groups.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the falling into fanfic this year has been eye-opening. And then, like, the lengths of some pieces, because you get, obviously, short pieces that are, like, less than 1,000 or 2,000 words, maybe no more than 5,000, some that are, like, 100 words or less, ficlets. And then you get things that are basically, you know, it's a novel.
Pickles.
It's novels worth. And I mentioned a few episodes ago, Twist and Shout, which is a supernatural alternative universe fanfic with a pairing of Dean and Castiel. It's a tragic love story set between the 1960s and the early 1980s, following their relationship growing together, its ultimate, almost predestined sort of destruction, and how even though they tried to pick up the pieces decades later, it never really happens. And it is a painful piece of fan fiction to read. It's really well written, genuinely well written, but it is emotionally heartbreaking because of what happens in like the final third of the book.
That's the thing. I mean, people may have this perception that fanfiction is written by amateurs and therefore all of it's bad, but there are some good writers out there as well.
Yep.
I haven't really ventured into, fanfiction that much.
Well, the thing is, it's like there's good fanfiction, there's good fan art. You find fan art out there that is just amazing to look at, and you never see any merchandising sides of the official arms to do with stuff, actually producing stuff as good as it.
There have been occasional bits, like I've seen some amazing Mass Effect artwork, like airbrush or painted ones, which I was sorely tempted. If they were available on t-shirts, I would have had them. And there was one where an artist did hoodies. She did hoodie designs based on, certain characters, like there was Quarian and Turian, and they looked pretty damn good. So, you put the hoodie up, and it looked a lot like the, you know, sort of Quarian sort of hood scarf that they have as part of their, you know, get-up. And, you know, there was a Geth worn and, you know, things like that, and they looked brilliant. And I think those got picked up.
But that's
an exception rather than...
I've seen some good sort of supernatural stuff kind of collected in places available for sale as well. One thing that I've also noticed, because obviously I'm really into my knitting, is the amount of like fan sort of Fibercrafts creations that are out there from, is it called Iogami? It's like when you sort of either crochet or knit little sort of characters from stuff and then obviously stuff them. Or you'll get things that are obviously like people knitting Doctor Who scarves. Or in some cases, oh God, there was this really intricate, almost as detailed as a tapestry in terms of the amount of scenes it displayed, but it was a scarf showing stuff from Star Wars. And it'd been done in what's known as double knitted technique, or double side knitting. And basically you had like the picture on one side of the piece, and it's like one colour and one colour. And then on the other side, it's exactly the same, but it's the colours are reversed.
And it's
just incredibly intricate. I've even seen ones with flipping like elfish from Lord of the Rings, all accurately and intricately done along the whole length of the scarf. And I've seen Gryffindor scarves and Ravenclaw scarves, Slytherin scarves and Hufflepuff and stuff as well.
You know what's kind of interesting, though? Is when like the people behind the series actually kind of get involved with, you know, kind of these fan creations as well. Because I do believe Star Trek has kind of had several projects on it, which is basically like, you know, getting some of the people that have kind of played even minor roles, you know, so like on Star Trek before, kind of, you know, basically doing their own, you know, production. And it's kind of bizarre, but kind of cool at the same time. And it's like, it's not quite canon, but it has the backing of the stars. And yeah, and
I think
That has got a little bit of a, you know, a weird history to it. Because
Fan videos.
Yeah. Before we came on air, I said about, you know, there were, you know, things like there's a tradition in Japan of what they call doujinshi, which is, you know, just fan stuff. And it's no matter what the internet says, it's not, you know, entirely porn, for God's sake. But it's got, it's kind of like, you know, fanfic in that, you know, people will do their own comics of series and, you know, they'll do all the artwork and things. And the way a lot of the Japanese companies look at it is they see it as it's promotion. It's our fandom. So if they want to do stuff which will, you know, promote it, they're doing all the work. And we're not going to stop them. So whereas it, you know, it's sort of technically illegal, they won't do anything
about it
because, you know, they know that it's, you know, best of intention and it's positive for them in the long run because it's not ripping them off. Whereas I remember when, when the internet was first starting, and for years after that, a lot of the companies, including Paramount, were arseholes when it came to copyright. To the extent that they were shutting down Star Trek fan sites because they were using the logo.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. It was just insane, where it's just, you've really got no idea, have you? You've got a series, you know, which is basically, it sells itself and people are selling it for you. And you're shutting it down.
I suppose that's why you've got things like, is it the Society for Transformative Works? So basically the people that run Archive of Our Own, AO3, they do a lot of work to keep fan fiction out of legal trouble by kind of pointing out that, you know, it's not taking money away.
Yeah.
Basically, it's helping to keep the fan... Because the fandom will... What? There's a new film out, new series? Yes, we'll have it. Let us have the thing. But in the meantime, when there's no new thing, we're going to be doing our own thing. Basically.
Yeah, it's in... You know, why I've been so down on, you know, companies, you know, Nintendo not being the only one, who have, you know, taken such dim view of people doing Let's Play videos and the like, where... Yes, technically it will be infringing on your work. However, these people are selling your work for you. For people to go, that looks good. I hadn't thought of playing that before. I will go and buy it now. It's the same kind of, it just, it might be against, you know, the letter of the law, using characters or artwork or, you know, whatever that, you know, you've got. But, you know, people are doing it because they love your stuff.
But then, but then there's the other extreme where in like the Supernatural fandom, and it's some, I mean, this is just something of a...
Are you calling Supernatural fandom extreme? He says, cherry picking your...
is like, since season 4, and yeah, since Castiel appeared on the scene and raised Dean from perdition, there's been this whole thing about them having a relationship. Like, the existence of Twist and Shout is just a one mile marker in a long line of stuff that's going back with the series since season 4, with there being, by some viewers, an inferred relationship between Dean and Kaz that is of a homosexual nature.
Because Castiel is such a personality magnet so far. It's just, he's so magnetic.
It kind of gets a bit more believable in season 5 due to stuff that happens, which I'm not going to spoil for you. There are things that happen. And basically, there was like for a time that almost seemed, I mean, I've never seen it confirmed by any showrunners or anything, but there almost for a time seemed that they would pander to this fan base that appeared, that kind of they shipped this, as it's called, this relationship between Dean and Kaz in their fanfic and in their fan art and other things. And it almost, you know, if they watched through the series and the episodes and that, there would be these moments of Destiel that they would see. And they still do.
Or to put it another way, it's Xena and Gabrielle again.
It is a bit, yeah. And it's never intentional. And the problem is obviously that Supernatural's put out by CW, who's obviously, you know, they're a channel aimed at young adults in America. And for a channel like that to suddenly start making statements about previously perceived two straight male characters that, you know, they might be gay or something, it would cause uproar among certain circles. And so, but, you know, this whole Destiel thing's continued. Anyway, during the course of season 10, due to various issues that probably have nothing to do with it, but it's kind of like the Destiel moments have been lacking. And this corner of the fan community's kind of picked up and been quite vocal about it. But they've also previously kind of, you know, gotten angry when things have gone certain ways, or like Dean's been interested in another particular character, or Kaz has been interested in a particular character, though in the instance of the character of Meg, because stuff will eventually happen between Kaz and Meg from where you are, Retroid.
Right.
The last actress to play Meg, unfortunately, the reason she's no longer in the show isn't because they really wanted to get rid of the character of Meg, but because the poor actress that was playing her was diagnosed with MS. was you know, unable to really perform anymore.
Yeah.
Which is why she kind of got written out, which is quite sad. But yeah, it's weird that the whole kind of like whether or not stuff has to be explicitly shown in a fandom for a fandom to like it or not. And I'm really not sure I got on now, but it was related. It's Dean and Kaz shipping versus what officially is happening in stuff. And I mean, I've read Twist and Shout, and I've read another Destiel fic, which was more comedy, alternative universe, which was called The Way to a Man's Heart is Through Chlamydia. That's a recent fic that finished.
Right.
And is completely available now. And, that was a funny fic. But again, it was kind of playing off of the sort of inferred potential relationship between the two characters in the series, which has never been fully explicitly explored.
Probably inferred mostly by desperate fangirls.
You say that they're if certainly watching stuff before season 10, there are a lot of moments between the guys where you're like, is there some, could there be something there? And
all I can say is, if you know, if Dean's gay or bi, he's been doing a lot of denial.
I think
over the years,
part of the problem is, as community has kind of demonstrated, is that you can kind of read into any interactions. Mm. You know, whether it's between, well, in community's case, whether it will be between Jeff and Britta, or Jeff and Annie, or you know, it's like was it Britta and Troy, and they did develop stuff, but that I think that was based on, you know.
I think the situation with the Dean and Kaz thing, though, there's a particular issue with it. Not because the issue isn't people inferring it; it's the issue is being more the studios and the station not being prepared to go through with it because of attitudes towards homosexuality in the States. It and because of the still slightly family, slightly, you know, teenagers and older watching it channel that is CW.
Really, do you reckon Supernatural's really aimed at teenagers?
It is aimed at teenagers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I'd say it's aimed at you know, teenagers and you know, sort of you know, also a bit older than teenagers, but
yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's. The fact that this whole thing, it's kind of like it could have developed into something. Nothing's ever been done with it. They've had one very visible gay character eventually, which was played by Felicia Day. Again, I don't want to spoil
much. Spoilers.
That's what I'm saying. You know, I'm not saying any more than that for Retroid's benefit.
She's not been in yet.
No.
For me.
Yeah.
You're looking forward to it?
Oh, Felicia.
But yeah, it's just the way that it's kind of the relationship. There's potential there, basically, and it's just never been outright explored because it does feel like there would be. But I mean, if we were going to compare characters that kind of went gay in a similar series, Buffy, I say gay. Technically, I think Willow's kind of lesbian, bi. I think, depending on where the comics went. I don't know where the comics went after a bit. But the issue there being that Willow's not in the same position as Dean is in Supernatural in terms of the hierarchy of characters. So it, to me, it always felt like Whedon was taking less risk by having her form a relationship with Tara.
Yeah.
Whereas in the case of Dean and Kaz in Supernatural, because of Dean's position as being like the one of the two front runner characters, it would have been far riskier. And certainly back in when season 4 happened, which is obviously like 6-7 years ago now, the situation in the States even back then was less than stellar. It was less than it is now in terms of being stellar for gay couples in terms of rights and stuff. So and it, you would not believe the power of a conservative viewer base. I mean, you've still got people now who will claim that, regardless of the Destiel situation, they'll just be like, this series is meant to be about the two brothers and nothing else.
It reminds me of like the complaints that they get when like a character turns gay, like towards the end of, or you know, comes out at like the very end of a series season, and you kind of hear kind of letters that have been written in pretty much saying, you know, I've loved your, you know, show for absolutely ages, and this is, you know, an abomination. And
you know. So, well, cheerio.
Yeah.
Just thinking that, you know, with you saying,
feeling
you
like
know,
they're being tricked, almost.
You know, maybe taking, you know, less risk by, you know, with Willow rather than, you know, the, you know, it, saying, you know, being Buffy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure because, of course, it was a much earlier series.
Yeah.
I would argue that Supernatural is in a, you know, much more liberal time than, you know, Buffy was. And both series have had it in the neck because they, you know, they deal with demons and things like that. And there's always a particular stripe of America which will just go batshit because you're talking about demons and the occult and it will just force young people.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's people that complain about Harry Potter.
Well, there's people complaining now about Gaiman's Lucifer series.
Yes, that's true.
We've got to bring this back. Let's bring this back to fan creation. So basically,
yeah.
in supernatural fic and art, there's obviously an exploration of this potential relationship with these two characters, and it forms a huge part of the kind of the more creative side of the creative force there. And you sort of see it reflected in other series. I mean, it's a bit squiffy when it happens in like relationships between certain characters, say Harry Potter universe. So it depends if they're the age they are during like the books or, you know, the period after the books. And that is I like the idea of fan creations, but it's just when people put, because some have sexy stuff in them and some don't. Some have smut, some don't have smut. The issue being, of course, if it's a series featuring underage characters and they're smart, and it's just like, no, don't do that. And like in America, their rights to express this are more existent than it's not existent here at all. So it's all going well having like a bunch of American teenagers writing, say, fanfic about Harry or Dean and Sam before they're 18. But it's like, yeah, that's great, but you might be underage writing it, but it's still going to get people in trouble for if they're found reading it, potentially. It's just like...
There have been some... I mean, you know, I'll say, you know, because, you know, I've whenever I've talked about, you know, fanfic, you know, it's always been that, yeah, there are some terrible things out there in, you know, in all senses. But, again, it's not all of the fanfic. It's just you always get the, you know... the worst or the, you know, the most controversial ones, which are, you know, drawn upon, and, you know, those are the ones that get the attention.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, with the, you know, Dijinshi things, it's like, yes, there, you know, there is smut, but it's a very small proportion. So it's like fanfic. Fanfic gets, you know, a lot of stick that, you know, it's all just, you know, plot. Say no, there are some really good authors writing really interesting things.
But I would say the majority of it actually is smut.
What, of fanfics as a whole?
Generally.
You can say that, that's fine.
I would say the majority of it is...
I would distance myself from that comment, to be honest.
Well, there's stuff you get that's like genfic, where it's kind of in canon, and it doesn't have any smut in it, and there's like no parents going on, it's just kind of, it's just following a story
Based on the universe. Pretty much almost like, you know, writing an episode yourself.
Yeah. But certainly, okay, if based on my experiences from Archive of Our Own's databases, no, seriously, the majority is not genfic.
Okay.
Because it gets to the state where you've got people asking for genfic recommendations and people that are unfortunately scratching their heads trying to think of stuff because it doesn't get written that much. And out of the stuff I may or may not have written, of the two genfic pieces that I've done, even though they may feature popular characters, they haven't been read anywhere near as much as the ones that feature smut.
Okay, so just to be sure, genfic tries to follow the canon.
Well, it doesn't necessarily try to follow the canon, but it certainly won't focus on pairings.
Okay.
You know, it might be about a moment that didn't necessarily feature in the TV series or the book or whatever, but it could be something that realistically could have happened in the universe.
Okay.
And it doesn't feature sex.
Yeah.
It's just general, just...
I mean, I was talking the other day with you, Emily, because I quite like, you know, when Marvel did their What If storylines.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that idea, but I know that, you know, a lot of the time, you know, TV series don't really do a What If.
There's a lot of fanfic What If, obviously, in my mix, because I've like glanced through the series, but I've only read Supernatural. Mm. But certainly in the Supernatural case, there's stuff set after season 5 if it had gone very differently. Very differently.
Which we can't talk about.
Yeah, which we can't talk about for Retroid.
No, you won't.
But I mean, like, we were kind of discussing how Buffy would have gone differently if certain things had happened differently in the last episodes of each season type thing. So say, for example, if Buffy hadn't have died in...
End of season one.
The next Slayer wouldn't have been called.
And the Slayer after that wouldn't have been called.
Yeah, so the whole kind of Kendra and then Faith, the storyline, that would have been, you know, wiped out, wiped clean.
I mean, not having Faith around would have been interesting.
Hmm. There again, having Faith around was kind of interesting as well.
Yeah, it was quite a bit in the long run, wasn't
it? It did great through season three a little bit, but I think after that point, it got more interesting.
I think I want to move away from the slightly more canon-y type, or potentially canon-y stuff with Fan Creations, is that what perhaps... So I've mentioned alternative universe, so this is where you take the elementary aspects of characters from an existing series and put them into settings which they are not in that series. So having Castiel as a baker, or Dean as a motorcycle racer.
Are these actual stories that you've...
These okay. are characterizations.
I didn't know whether you were just, you know,
no,
snowballing.
No, these are characterizations of stuff I've read.
As a baker.
Yeah, Castiel as a baker, pastry chef.
So I was thinking maybe...
Why?
Because it's alternative universe. You get stuff like that going on.
That's not a good enough reason.
It's fanfic. Anything can happen. It's fanfic. It's not...
That should be the tagline.
Fanfic. Anything can happen.
Anything can happen. Asterisk. Warning. Anything can happen.
But then outside of that, in of its very nature, it potentially becomes AU. You get crossover fanfics. So there's Super Who Lock, which is Supernatural crossed with Doctor Who and Sherlock. And obviously there's Super Lock, which is just Supernatural and Sherlock. I haven't read any of those because I'm not keen on the idea of reading crossover, except for maybe Buffy and Supernatural.
Well, I mean, Supernatural hasn't really shifted too much outside the US that much, has it? So...
It's fanfic. It doesn't matter if it's not canon at this point.
I can kind of understand why people would kind of veer away from certain stories because it doesn't quite make sense to them.
I saw a write-up for... I haven't read it, but I saw a write-up for a fanfic that went out over the weekend over on AO3. It was still Supernatural. And it was looking at how other hunters had been coping with things outside of the US, so hunters based in other countries.
That'd be an interesting read.
And they
remembered us.
I mean, it reminds me of like whenever there's like an American zombie film, and most of the time it's always like rest of the world. Don't even bother. You know,
I can't remember which are some of the top universes that get fanfic written for them, but Supernatural is one of the top ones.
Okay.
But other stuff I've seen it cross with includes the Avengers.
Avengers?
Yep.
Okay.
I think there's definitely stories where a certain trickster and another certain trickster have ended up in the same place at the same time. I can't be specific.
Battle of the Tricksters.
I can't be specific for the sake of...
Puny God.
Retroid.
Well, the trickster has been in two episodes of Supernatural I've watched so far.
Yeah, but you don't know what I know.
That sounds ominous.
Nah.
Okay, where are we going to take this? Fan art obviously can be quite amazing, but I think it's the fact that there's just, I suppose, people get icky about fan creations because of the sexual side.
I am actually looking through Modern Solus stuff on... deviant art at the moment.
And is it sexual?
No.
There we go.
Just had to...
And then there's obviously a lot of...
Well, technically it would be a bit difficult if you apply, you know, like human age of consent to Salarians because they only live until about 20.
Yeah.
Well, so 50, did you say?
No, about 20.
Yes. Really? Salarians die really young, yeah. Take it back to you've got stuff which is obviously where people kind of work out sexual fantasies with, you know, the original creation.
Shall I chip in?
What, with your story?
What, my 7 of 9? Not mine.
It's not yours!
It's not mine.
Right. Now that we got that cleared up.
Yes. I got linked to it by a friend. And she just said, you know, you'll like this because it's terrible. And one of the things with fanfic is with it being, you know, like all creative.
Anything can happen.
Yeah, anything can happen. And it's when people with certain tastes decide, oh yes, I think Star Trek Voyager is a perfect vehicle for my particular little kink. And in this case, it was a Seven of Nine fanfic where her Borg nanoprobes decide to malfunction for some reason. And of course, what do they do? They make her dangerous. Do they exaggerate her Borg features? Do they remove her humanity? No, they make her tits grow huge.
And that's
basically the plot line where she has to cope with ever larger breasts, and the rest of the crew have to deal with their feelings.
With feelings
about this, feelings. And I just have to deal with reading it so I can get to the end and say, thanks very much. I never want to read anything like that ever again. Thank you, Lindsay.
Written by Wetroid.
No, I'm kidding. Just loop that and you'll have my reaction for it. The rest of the evening, just no.
Meanwhile, in the supernatural trenches, there's
in the crevices.
Because before Destiel, Wincest existed, in which brotherly love went beyond brotherly love.
Yeah, and it's just people.
Yeah,
I've seen kind of a similar thing with some comments on, I think it was 4chan. Don't ask me why I ended up on 4chan looking up Witcher 3 things, but people saying why can't Witcher sleep with Ciri? Because she's his adopted daughter. Probably why you lot want that, isn't it?
I thought because, he can't sleep with his iPhone. I cannot be the first person to make that joke.
My wife was playing Witcher 3, I was constantly having to fight back every time anyone said Ciri. Having to fight the...
I don't have.
I don't have any issues with the
Wincest crowd, as it were. They can have to go as long as nothing's underage. It's fine. In my books, but then you've got stuff like the
just bash it out.
Then there's like the ABO crowds, and I think they exist in some fandoms as well. But it seems to have been really jumped on by certain corners of the supernatural fan creation community.
Mm.
ABO referring to Alpha, Beta, Omega, in which characters are given werewolf-like traits, and it almost always ends up devolving into some degree of smuttiness. There's some where it's somehow ABO and fluff, but so much of it is just smut. And it's just... And then it crosses over
That's part of my id just scuttling away and retreating to the back of my skull.
And then it crosses over with other subsets. So you'll get Wincest ABO or like Destiel ABO, and it's just like But then you'll get stuff that's like really well written and considerate, where they'll try to explain why the Alpha, Beta, Omega stuff actually does exist.
The term you're looking for is justification.
and then actually try to porn with plot, basically. So there is like a load of plot and actual story going on, and then there's porny moments, and then there's story. That stuff does exist in that field, but the majority of it is not as considerately written.
You have all kinds of different stripes of what people are aiming for with their work.
Yeah. Basically. And DeviantArt, as soon as you start looking for this kind of stuff, can get very dangerous. I mean, if you're looking for that stuff, you're already in dangerous territory, but yeah. Not safe for anything. But has anyone else got anything else to say about migrations? I mean, I suppose one of the bigger aspects, I think it tends to be guys that go for it a little bit more, is fan videos.
Hmm.
Most of the
There have been some amazing things like Half-Life 2 fan videos. there was a brilliant Russian one I saw a while back where they filmed it on, especially with, you know, part, you know, good chunks of Half-Life 2 taking place in sort of, you know, abandoned Eastern Europe. It's never specifically said, but, you know, it's Eastern Europe someplace, you know, City 17. So they'd have things like resistance fighters trying to escape from, you know, some of the Combine and fighting through old houses and an abandoned bus and, you know, things like that, only for, you know, Gordon Freeman to show up, you know, near the end and bash someone's head in, you know, with a crowbar, you know, or something like that. But, you know, using a lot of the sound effects and the radio chatter from, you know, the game, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And it's just, you know, very nicely done. And something else which has come to mind, which I've, you know, mentioned in the previous podcast, things like Bruce Lee 2 on the Commodore 64, where they're fan edits, and that's a whole new level of, you know, fan creation, where you get into the, you know, very nerdy pursuit of, you know, hex editing old games to make entirely new Zeldas or entirely new Metroid games, or retranslate RPGs, which they, you know, people consider they were, you know, they were butchered and simplified too much on the journey from Japanese. So they take it upon themselves to retranslate pretty much novels worth of text and items and events in a game and then release it fixed. And it, how many people are actually going to play that? Just like, you know, with fanfic, there, you know, the people are working on it, and there may not be that many people who will ever read it.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that it's something, you know, they've had a creative itch and they've decided to scratch it.
Yeah.
This particular way. And, you know, whatever someone does, unless it's that 7 of 9 fanfic, I've got to respect that level of, you know, dedication to, yeah, let's just make something.
And just, I think we need to certainly mention cosplayers. Talk about fan creations.
Oh, yeah.
The cosplayers that actually make everything from their actual costumes down to, like, their accessories and weapons. There's some amazing dedication out there. From Space Marine costumes, like, all the way down to, obviously, like, sort of, like, Harlequin assemblers.
Mm. And there's Some of the Mass Effect cosplay, where people have done Quarians or Turians or Geth, and they've even got you know, the armor down so far as they've created almost either stilts or, you know, disguised high heels for them, so they can do the, you know, the double jointed legs. And it's just that's a hell of a lot of dedication just for something that you're going to wander around in and regret it more or less all day. Because of the pain you're going to be in.
Yeah.
But yes, there's some amazing stuff.
And I suppose there's, like, there's properly made, like, when I say properly made, really well edited fan music videos.
Oh yeah.
Which could be quite good. And sort of like, I mean, I suppose it depends, as long as people, like, actually acknowledge where they've taken all the material for those from. Because once you upload that to YouTube, it could get a little interesting.
Yeah.
But, yeah, okay. I'm going to move this on finally. Sorry if you've been, you know, out-kinked by all of that.
I think we've been very mild considering
what's out there. Yeah, actually, we have held back quite a bit of what's out there.
I mean, there's Rule 34, and that should never be underestimated.
Yeah, seriously should not be underestimated. I'm going to bring us over to say that in episode 142, which is coming up, so that's episode 142, I don't know how many episodes away, but it'll be
three,
sometime next month, or the end of this month, we're going to be talking about Orange is the New Black. So if, I mean, that series 3 is out this week, so if you want
that's
to get...
three including this one.
Series 3 of Orange is the New Black is out this Friday, so if you want to get prepared for this episode, because some of us are going to be trying to rewatch the previous two seasons as well as watching the new season, or if you've never watched it before, you know, watch it. Yeah, we're going to be talking about it on episode 142. So I suppose as we sort of, well, I'm not sure if we're going to have time to discuss what we've been up to other than maybe Sense8 in a bit. But, and somehow maybe more Supernatural. news this past week. I think the biggest piece of news that I saw was the sudden kind of eruption of interest in Fallout 4 finally being officially announced by Bethesda last week. As the initial kind of like, is that real? When the website address with the counter was like revealed. I saw initial tweets for it and I looked at it, went onto the domain. It's like, yeah, that's real because the domain's their proper freaking domain.
Because it was fallout.bethesda.
Yeah. It's like, no, that's theirs. It's fine, guys. It's fine. Yeah, that, I mean, we're not going to learn more about that until E3. And rumours are currently circulating of, oh, it could be released at the end of this year. But I know, I would like to go for more realistically sometime next year, like the end of next year.
I don't care about realism. I want it now.
Unfortunately, you're going to have to wait for your Visions of Boston.
Ooh.
That appears to be where it's set, certainly if the video, short video that they released was anything to go by.
I'm this far off pre-ordering slash, you know, pre-buying on PC.
Really? Just that close?
Yeah, it's just, it is a, you know, take my money. Because it's like, please take my money. I want that. I want Fallout 4. Ideally, I want Elder Scrolls 6.
But you'll take Fallout 4?
I'll take Fallout 4 until then.
Okay. So we won't be able to talk more about that until E3, and I think we'll probably try and get an E3 episode together, you know, once it's actually happened. The other bits of news, well, today it was finally revealed by, was it a showrunner? Somebody involved, certainly, in Constantine, that the show is no more at the moment. It seems that people have been let go from contracts. Everything seems to have been properly wound up. They haven't actually managed to save the series after 13 episodes. So that was kind of a downer. I'm a little surprised that it didn't get picked up by maybe somebody like, I don't know, maybe obviously like Netflix or Amazon.
I was desperately hoping it would be.
But yeah, it was not to be. Meanwhile, alternatively, in comic book adaptation to TV news, The Wicked and Divine by Kieran Gillen is currently being turned into a TV series, which is quite something considering that it's only been going for about a year or so. But obviously somebody's paid attention to the sort of cult following that the series has managed to garner. And yeah, they're making a series at the moment. I mean, obviously it's not going to be like, it is definitely a series until, you know, A, a pilot has been made, and B, somebody's picked something up based on that pilot. Has anyone else got any news?
Well, most of the news is being held back because of E3, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just tidbits. Tidbits here and there.
Not much.
Nope.
Other than Uwe Boll just swearing at everyone.
Headphones.
You got a new set of headphones? It's pretty, they good?
No.
No.
Another pound shop job.
Yes. Well, it was pound shop, and I'm, you know, picking up other stuff like some crisps. It was okay. Let's try them. They're not bad. They're far from the worst set I've ever tried, to be honest. But yeah. They're not fantastic. They don't fit well. So I think I'll be staying with my more expensive ones that I already own. Shock horror. Pound shop headphones are not as good as more expensive ones.
Okay.
Exclusive.
Exclusively here. Pound shop headphones not necessarily as good as more expensive ones.
Mm.
Who'd have thunk?
I know, it's amazing. See, it's investigative journalism.
I think, based on that new situation, I'm going to move us on to what we've been up to, other than reading fan fiction and looking at fan art.
I'm still looking at fan art. I'm
you're still looking at
and soulless.
I am
hashtag gay for Morden.
I started a Supernatural season 10 rewatch with a bunch of people last week. And
is it rewatch?
Yeah, rewatch already. That was interesting because like everyone was kind of like unsure. Oh, was season 10 as iffy as we thought it was? And conclusion is that out of the first four episodes, the fourth episode called Paper Moon, which is a werewolf story, is probably the first like genuinely weak episode that the season had. I don't want to go into more detail than that, but it is a werewolf episode, and the consensus from the people that were involved in the rewatch was like, yeah, that wasn't so great, basically.
Yeah. Sometimes when you rewatch something, a bad episode can turn out to be better than you thought.
In this particular case, it wasn't. Like, people weren't so sure about it the first time round, and in the
and
rewatch.
And it just confirmed.
Yeah, it just confirmed it. But it's like, there's like a lot of episodes that were kind of hit and miss, so whether or not it turns out that people like more of it on a rewatch, we'll see. Mm. But then the other main thing, really, which we've watched in the past week, at least here, is we finally started watching Sense8, the new Netflix series, which is headed by the Wachowskis. Paul, thoughts on it?
In a way, it feels a little similar to Cloud Atlas, just in the way that it's kind of like loads of different stories that don't appear to be connected at first, or, you know, at least weakly connected, that kind of slowly come together. If you like Cloud Atlas, which I do, I quite liked it, then, you know, you'll get something quite good out of it. But as a whole, it's we don't seem to have, so we've only watched the first couple of episodes so far, we don't seem to have had like a kind of necessarily a reasoning behind stuff happening, but it's kind of interesting. The concept is that eight people are connected all across the world, and they seem to experience sensations and kind of feelings of one another. Say for example, a woman in London will have some like random feelings of, you know, fear, or, you know, hearing like sirens off in the distance or whatever, or, you know, opening a door or whatever, and the experience is actually from one of the other eight.
Should we give our listeners the Martha? What's her name again? That plays
Freema Agyeman.
You say it again.
Freema Agyeman.
It's not happening. Okay. Warning: the actress that played Martha in Doctor Who has an interesting role in this series, and
her introduction is
pretty explicit, and probably explains.
Her entry.
Yeah, and probably explains why the series is rated 18 on UK Netflix. Yeah.
I'm curious if it got censored.
I don't think it necessarily would have, but, like, certainly if somebody was signed into a child account, they probably wouldn't have got anywhere near it. That's to say.
Yeah.
Should hope not, anyway.
Yeah. You've been...
Where is it? Mummy, what the hell's going on there?
You've been watching more Continuum.
Continuum?
Yeah.
Yes.
That thing.
I have. I'm on season two now. It's been quite go slow because I keep on picking it up and then dropping it and picking up and dropping it. But it's started to kind of build momentum, and it is becoming more of an interesting series as stuff progresses. The main character becoming more and more vulnerable. So as less of a necessarily badass that, you know, is able to do everything by herself, and she's having to rely on more people kind of more and more. It's like her vulnerabilities are coming out, like, you know, her desire to kind of get home to the future and to her son and family and that type of thing. Yeah. And on the whole, I read up on Wikipedia about whether it's still going or not. It is still going technically, but I think season four is supposed to be its last series. I think it was six episodes, so it's going to be a shorter season. We're going to have those six, presumably, to wrap stuff up. I don't know, to be honest, it's kind of one of those things where I kind of like getting into new series that I haven't kind of seen before. But if it's still going, then I've got that fear of, you know, basically catching up and then having to wait absolutely ages for more episodes. But by the same token, if I watch something that it's already kind of come and gone, then, you know, there's that feeling of kind of getting all the way up to the end and being like, what? You can't leave it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why even if the last season is, you know, shorter, if they specifically know it's the last season, then at least you might get some
closure
resolution. Yeah. Yeah.
But sometimes, it, you know, the closure isn't proper closure. I mean, say, for example, when watching Lie to Me, the last episode of that, you know, it kind of started to kind of infer that there was feelings between Cal and, you know, his partner. And, yeah, that's as far as we got. So, you know, no resolution to the sexual tension that's been going throughout the series. No kind of destruction of the Lightman group or no, you know, kind of deaths or anything like that. It just felt almost like, you know, it was designed to carry on, but just didn't.
Mm. Retroid, what have you been up to?
I have mostly been up to not playing a lead.
Ooh.
I picked up, well, as you know, I've mentioned before that I picked up a cheapy copy of Final Fantasy III for my DSi. I'll say new DSi. It's pre-owned, and of course I'm, you know, well behind the curve with the DS software. But, yeah, for some reason, I've dabbled with Final Fantasy III previously. When I say Final Fantasy III, it is Final Fantasy III. It's nothing to do with the stupid numbering in the West of the original ones. Because some people think Final Fantasy III is Final Fantasy VI. I'm talking about the third game, not just the ones that were released in America. Because all the renaming and numbering they did. But yeah.
It confuses people today, even.
Yes. I must have sank something like 34, 35 hours into it now.
Way.
Reasonable amount, then.
It's quite a reasonable amount. My characters are hovering around level 54, and I've been playing around with a job system in it. I did have one moment a few days ago when my DSi got thrown.
What?
Why did it get thrown?
Going through a dungeon, and it's one of the end dungeons. I'm not sure whether it's the end dungeon or in just a sort of kind of like a, you know, penultimate one. But either way, it's quite hard, and I'm having to fight major characters. And I got right to the end of the dungeon. The portal out was on the screen. One final fight wiped me out. And you can't save when you're in a dungeon. So I'd done quite a lot of adventuring, quite a lot of re-equipping. I'd done some, you know, job leveling up. You know, all of that got new ultimate weapons, you know, stuff like that. And yeah, it was all just gone. And it was like, right. So it didn't get, massively thrown with force, but I was sitting down and it just sort of got tossed onto the mat in front of me. And then within a few minutes, I picked it up again and started playing it. And it's like, oh, this is why people like Final Fantasy III.
I like having save points in dungeons that they do in the later games.
No, go on.
I was just going to say that I have a serious problem with Final Fantasy games in that what usually happens with me is kind of I play all the way through them once, and then when I pick them up the second time, I play through them right up until the final dungeon, in which case I kind of lose my drive for it, because it's like, well, I'm not necessarily playing for the story. I'm kind of playing for, you know, kind of leveling up and, you know, the rewards and, you know, kind of getting the ultimate weapons,
and
limit
strategy.
Breaks, stuff like that.
The strategy and fiddling
exactly.
about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like venturing off into the final dungeon is like...
Especially in the case of Seven of Sephiroth.
Yeah. The amount of times that I've just kind of got, you know, it's like as well as I can do, you know, sort of like Knights of the Round, you know, all of the different special chocobos and whatnot, you know, kind of get into, you know, pretty much most of the way through Northern Cave. And I've done the trick where you kind of say that you go in one route and then you actually go the other, so that you pick up the mega ore materia, and then you kind of
go back.
I've got two mega ore materials. Whoa! And I got all of the enemy skills and whatnot, and then I kind of save, and then it's like, yeah, I can't be asked to complete it.
You know how it ends.
Especially as once you complete it, that's it done. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, yeah, I've built my characters up, you know, to, you know, maximum strength and whatnot, and yeah, there's not really much point in me carrying on now. So yeah, you usually end up just dropping them after that.
And just to check, Retroid, which season of Supernatural have you got up to now?
I am now about a third into season 4.
Okay.
So I have been angeled. Okay. I have been castelled with him coming on, and I'm thinking, he looks a lot like John Constantine. How strange.
Watch Supernatural. It is your destiny.
I don't think it was intentional on their part.
Are you sure?
There have been almost no Constantine references prior to that point, and then the trench coat appears, and I think Clark Kent wore a coat like that at some point. You know,
I'm not at all convinced that it could be an accident.
It's a look that is based in the real world, so you can kind of see characters accidentally kind of wearing.
It is, but kind of come on, put them side by side.
I think Kaz is cuter than Constantine.
Constantine's not meant to be cute, though, is he?
He's like rough around the edges and stinking of booze and fags. Kaz is Kaz. Castiel, you know. Castiel.
I think Constantine would have him in a fight.
Probably, as long as Constantine knows stuff to do with angels. I mean, I've only ever seen him deal with demonic and other non-angelic supernatural bodies.
See, this is the problem when you cross stuff over. You get lore complicated.
I reckon Constantine would win.
I would say that other than the hex bags thing, that the magic of supernatural and ritual and the magic and ritual of Constantine, they're quite similar in some ways, but then the demons are not. So
I would be absolutely amazed that someone who works on that series and was responsible for the look of Castiel has not seen anything about Hellblazer.
It's entirely staggered. Possible. I think it's entirely possible.
That Supernatural does have, what is it, an anime?
Yeah, there's an anime of the first two seasons.
Oh, Jesus, no.
I think.
But especially considering how many pop culture references are in the series.
True.
See, that's how you make a good series. You stick in tons of pop culture references. Right, and then with Buffy.
And then people ignore when the bad writing comes up because they're like, oh yeah, I know what you meant when the reference comes up. Anyway, that is truly all we've got time for this week. So it is goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood, otherwise known as Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's good night for me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter @EK6891. Don't forget to check out Orange is the New Black in the next few weeks so that you can, you know, listen to us talk about the girls, you know, in episode 142.
There's probably fan fiction of that.
I am really... Don't.
Just don't.
I was wondering what he's going
to
say then.
I am really looking forward to watching the television series.
There, you can find the notes for this episode over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. You can tweet us at nerdspodcast. Do tweet us, we like tweets. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+, Nerdsassemble Podcast. Don't forget to check hexdimension.com, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Anything can happen. Anything.
Warning, anything can happen.